Page 1. Chapter 1. A Low Art. Now that I'm dead, I know everything. This is what I wished would happen, but like so many of my wishes, it failed to come true. I know only a few factoids that I didn't know before. Death is much too high a price to pay for the satisfaction of curiosity, needless to say. Since being dead, since achieving this state of bonelessness, liplessness, breastlessness, I've learned some things that I would rather not know, as one does when listening at windows or opening other people's letters. You think you'd like to read minds? Think again. Down here, everyone arrives with a sack, like the sacks used to keep the winds in. But each of these sacks is full of words. Words you've spoken, words you've heard, words that have been said about you. Some sacks are very small, others large. My own is of a reasonable size, though a lot of the words in it concern my eminent husband. Page 2. What a fool he made of me, some say. It was a specialty of his, making fools. He got away with everything, which was another of his specialties, getting away. He was always so plausible. Many people have believed that his version of events was the true one, give or take a few murders, a few beautiful seductresses, a few one-eyed monsters. Even I believed him from time to time. I knew he was tricky and a liar. I just didn't think he would play his tricks and try out his lies on me. Hadn't I been faithful? Hadn't I waited and waited and waited, despite the temptation, almost the compulsion, to do otherwise? And what did I amount to once the official version gained ground? An edifying legend, a stick used to beat other women with. Why couldn't they be as considerate, as trustworthy, as all-suffering as I had been? That was the line they took, the singers, the yarn spinners. Don't follow my example, I want to scream in your ears. Yes, yours. But when I try to scream, I sound like an owl. Page 3. Of course I had inklings about his slipperiness, his wiliness, his foxiness, his unscrupulousness. But I turned a blind eye. I kept my mouth shut, or if I opened it, I sang his praises. I didn't contradict. I didn't ask awkward questions. I didn't dig deep. I wanted happy endings in those days, and happy endings are best achieved by keeping the right doors locked and going to sleep during the rampages. But after the main events were over and things had become less legendary, I realized how many people were laughing at me behind my back, how they were jeering, making jokes about me, jokes both clean and dirty, how they were turning me into a story, or into several stories, though not the kind of stories I'd prefer to hear about myself. What can a woman do when scandalous gossip travels the world? If she defends herself, she sounds guilty. So I waited some more. Now that all the others have run out of air, it's my turn to do a little storytelling, story making. I owe it to myself. I've had to work myself up to it. It's a low art tale telling. Page 4. Old women go in for it, strolling beggars, blind singers, maidservants, children, folks with time on their hands. Once people would have laughed if I'd tried to play the minstrel. There's nothing more preposterous than an aristocrat fumbling around with the arts. But who cares about public opinion now? The opinion of the people down here, the opinion of shadows, of echoes. So I'll spin a thread of my own. The difficulty is that I have no mouth through which I can speak. I can't make myself understood. Not in your world, the world of bodies, of tongues and fingers. And most of the time I have no listeners, not on your side of the river. Those of you who may catch the odd whisper, the odd squeak, so easily mistake my words for breezes rustling the dry reeds, for bats at twilight, for bad dreams. But I've always been of a determined nature. Patient, they used to call me. I like to see a thing through to the end. Page 5, Chapter 2. The Chorus Line, a rope-jumping rhyme. We are the maids, the ones you killed, the ones you failed. We danced in air, our bare feet twitched, it was not fair. With every goddess, queen, and bitch, from there to here, you scratched your itch. We did much less than what you did. You judged us bad. Page 6. You had the spear, you had the word at your command. We scrubbed the blood of our dead paramours from floors, from chairs, from stairs, from doors. We knelt in water while you stared at our bare feet. It was not fair, you licked our fear. It gave you pleasure. You raised your hand. You watched us fall. We danced on air, the ones you failed, the ones you killed. Page 7. Chapter 3, My Childhood. Where shall I begin? There are only two choices, at the beginning or not at the beginning. The real beginning would be the beginning of the world, after which one thing has led to another, but since there are differences of opinion about that, I'll begin with my own birth. My father was King Icarius of Sparta. My mother was a naiad. Daughters of naiads were a dime a dozen in those days. The place was crawling with them. Nevertheless, it never hurts to be of semi-divine birth, or it never hurts immediately. When I was quite young, my father ordered me to be thrown into the sea. I never knew exactly why during my lifetime, but now I suspect he'd been told by an oracle that I would weave his shroud. Possibly he thought that if he killed me first, his shroud would never be woven, and he would live forever. Page 8. I can see how the reasoning might have gone. In that case, his wish to drown me came from an understandable desire to protect himself. But he must have misheard, or else the oracle herself misheard. The gods often mumble, because it was not his shroud that was at issue, but my father-in-law's shroud. If that was the prophecy, it was a true one. And indeed, the weaving of this particular shroud proved a great convenience to me later on in my life. The teaching of crafts to girls has fallen out of fashion now, I understand, but luckily it had not in my day. It's always an advantage to have something to do with your hands. That way, if someone makes an inappropriate remark, you can pretend you haven't heard. Then you don't have to answer. But perhaps this shroud-weaving oracle idea of mine is baseless. Perhaps I have only invented it in order to make myself feel better. So much whispering goes on in the dark caverns, in the meadows, that sometimes it's hard to know whether the whispering is coming from others or from the inside of your own head. Page 9. I use head figuratively. We have dispensed with heads as such down here. No matter, into the sea I was thrown. Do I remember the waves closing over me? Do I remember the breath leaving my lungs and the sound of bells people say the drowning hear? Not in the least, but I was told the story. There is always some servant or slave or old nurse or busybody ready to regale a child with the awful things done to it by its parents when it was too young to remember. Hearing this discouraging anecdote did not improve my relations with my father. It is to this episode, or rather to my knowledge of it, that I attribute my reverse as well as my reserve, as well as my mistrust of other people's intentions. It was stupid of Icarius to try to drown the daughter of a naiad, however. Water is our element. It is our birthright. Although we are not such good swimmers as our mothers, we do have a way of floating, and we're well connected among the fish and seabirds. A flock of purple-striped ducks came to my rescue and towed me ashore. After an omen like that, what could my father do? Page 10. He took me back and renamed me. Duck was my new nickname. No doubt he felt guilty about what he'd almost done. He became, if anything, rather too affectionate towards me. I found this affection difficult to reciprocate. You can imagine. There I would be, strolling hand in hand with my apparently fond male parent, along a cliff edge or a river bank or a parapet, and the thought would occur to me that he might suddenly decide to shove me over or bash me to death with a rock. Preserving a calm facade under these circumstances was a challenge. After such excursions, I would retire to my room and dissolve in floods of tears. Excessive weeping, I might as well tell you now, is a handicap of the naiad born. I spent at least a quarter of my earthly life crying my eyes out. Fortunately, in my time, there were veils. They were a practical help for disguising red, puffy eyes. My mother, like all the naiads, was beautiful, but chilly at heart. She had waving hair and dimples and rippling laughter. She was elusive. When I was little, I often tried to throw my arms around her, but she had a habit of sliding away. Page 11. I like to think that she may have been responsible for calling up that flock of ducks, but probably she wasn't. She preferred swimming in the river to the care of small children, and I often slipped her mind. If my father hadn't thrown me into the sea, she might have dropped me in herself, in a fit of absent-mindedness or irritation. She had a short attention span and rapidly changing emotions. You can see by what I've told you that I was a child who learned early the virtues, if such they are, of self-sufficiency. I knew that I would have to look out for myself in the world. I could hardly count on family support. Page 12 is blank. Page 13, Chapter 4, the chorus line, Kitty Mourn, a Lament by the Maids. We too were children. We too were born to the wrong parents. Poor parents, slave parents, peasant parents, and serf parents. Parents who sold us, parents from whom we were stolen. These parents were not gods, they were not demigods, they were not nymphs or naiads. We were set to work in the palace as children. We drudged from dawn to dusk as children. If we wept, no one dried our tears. If we slept, we were kicked awake. We were told we were motherless. We were told we were fatherless. We were told we were lazy. We were told we were dirty. We were dirty. Dirt was our concern. Dirt was our business. Dirt was our specialty. Dirt was our fault. We were the dirty girls. If our owners or the sons of our owners or a visiting nobleman or the sons of a visiting nobleman wanted to sleep with us, we could not refuse. Page 14. It did us no good to weep. It did us no good to say we were in pain. All this happened to us when we were children. If we were pretty children, our lives were worse. We ground the floor for lavish wedding feasts, then we ate the leftovers. We would never have a wedding feast of our own. No rich gifts would be exchanged for us. Our bodies had little value. But we wanted to sing and dance, too. We wanted to be happy, too. As we grew older, we became polished and evasive. We mastered the secret sneer. We swayed our hips. We lurked. We winked. We signaled with our eyebrows. Even when we were children, we met boys behind the pig pens, noble boys and ignoble boys alike. We rolled around in the straw, in the mud, in the dung, on the beds of soft fleece we were making up for our masters.